For every business challenge, there's a solution. The Big Small Business Show is made possible by MTN Business.
And by Chartered Accountants of South Africa. Lead your industry with a responsible partner. Partner with the CASA today.
On the menu today,
from my perspective, I want to ask you around the pricing. You know, the incoming big competitor, their pricing versus yours. Is there a big difference?
Well, I think it's one thing being vulnerable as a leader. I think in tough times, it does not make sense to pretend that things are not tough.
The fragmented mindset of being a mother and an entrepreneur requires different emotional stability as well.
Hello and welcome to the Big Small Business Show. On the show, we support entrepreneurs at every stage of the entrepreneurial journey. Whether you've just started a business, came up with it in the shower this morning and want to know if it's a good idea or not, whether you're a big business who's battling to get to the next level, this is the show for you. And this is our panel section today. And with us in studio today, we have our marketing guru, Mona Lisa. Welcome.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be back.
And Kumaran Padiachi, who is our finance guru.
How's it?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Well, very good.
Good, good. Bringing up your checkered past here. Now, our guest in studio today is David Sanker. He's CEO of the Business Exchange. They provide office space to businesses, and their offerings range from work desks to collaborative spaces to typical offices you'd find in any other office block. Let's have a look.
The Business Exchange is a company that provides office spaces to other businesses. With fully equipped and creative meeting rooms, contemporary furnished private offices, a gym, and full IT, voice, and administration services, the founder of the business, David Sanker, wanted to create an environment for all tenants, especially SMEs, to succeed in their fields.
In my previous business, as an entrepreneur, I actually had an office in a business center. And coming from a property background in my corporate career, my business then was all about connecting entrepreneurs to investors. You know, we had an online brokerage where entrepreneurs could upload their deals and connect to investors. So when I was working there in the business center, I saw a gap for doing what I did, but also bringing in the property side of it. And that's how the concepts of the Business Exchange came about.
We had an office in an area called Maboneng. At the time it worked, we thought brilliant, we're in the heart of the action. We discovered much later that there was problems with like traffic, so pulling in and out of there was a mission. So a friend of mine recommended the Business Exchange. As a small business, they really do give you a sense of belonging. So you get a sense of there are other people that are going through the same things that you are. So ever so often, they'll have these events where we network, you know, we chat to each other, and we're constantly feeding off each other. So there's a great sense of family and belonging.
The business has been in operation for 5 years with a turnover approaching 50 million. David currently has 4 centers running across the country with a staff of 30 employees.
I've been working for TBE for the last 2.5 years. We have captured the Gauteng market in under 5 years. We are now expanding nationally, and we're going to border into Mauritius and into Africa very soon.
Doing what we do, we create workspace, and initially when we find a building, we have to build it out and fit it out and create offices. So we made a couple of mistakes in that regard with the sizing of some of the offices. So later on, we had to restructure that. We had some big tenants move in that then moved out. So we had to again create smaller little cellular spaces out of these massive spaces, which we didn't envisage we had to do. So that sets us back at a point, you know, about a year after opening. Obviously, from a cash flow point of view and income point of view, that, you know, we took a bit of a knock, but we bounced back well.
David seeks to expand his business, having a 50% foothold across the African continent. But in order to achieve this long-term goal, he still needs to find a way of overcoming his new challenge.
Next year, we have a big international competitor coming to South Africa. and they provide quite a similar offering to what we do. So my question to the panel would be, how do I mitigate against that?
Well, as you heard, David would like us to assist him to prepare for the arrival of an international competitor. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
Right, let's just start off by looking at South Africa. South Africa alone is a very competitive space. How do you differentiate yourself here with local competitors?
So I like to call it our three pillars, which is space, community, and collaboration. When we create our spaces, we focus on the design aspect. It's very cutting edge and contemporary. We have amazing artworks, some internationally acclaimed artists exhibits in our spaces. We have amazing technology, and the location is really good. And around the community, we, sounds a bit cliche, but we really do, as one of our tenants said, we have a personal touch that we give all of our tenants. And collaboration, we do that through two ways. We have events every single month, some are networking, some more informal, and also our app. So we use technology in our app to help collaboration amongst tenants that can engage in the app, advertise their services, and there's directories and classifieds. Yeah, so those are the three ways we differentiate right now, and we've done it really well so far.
So effectively, you more, if I'm understanding correctly, more business aimed at doing business.
Absolutely.
It's not about the funky space. It's about the business of doing business. Would that be correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say we're a very serious brand. We're more sophisticated than our competitors, from the way we design our workspaces to the way we interact with our people and our tenants. So yeah, we're serious about business, and we see it all the time. You know, our tenants collaborate naturally and get deals done.
What aspects of this international competitor are you worried about specifically?
So they're a very fast-growing company internationally. They've gone into many different countries and continents. So it's the first time they're coming here. They're a lot more closely aligned to what we do and our value proposition versus the local competitors. Look, we've had big international companies here for a very long time, you know, 20, 30, 25 years. But they're a lot more aligned with us and the way we go about our business. Although they're not as serious and sophisticated as we are, their design, aesthetics, community, those sort of aspects.
They have a lot of bullets as well.
Absolutely.
And so what is your, you've obviously been thinking about this, what is your preconceived ideas on how you think you want to head them off at the pass before we give you our thoughts?
Yeah, so I think, as I mentioned earlier, we are a serious company, serious brand, and the way we do things is in a serious way. Whereas they've positioned themselves as more of a funky freelancer, beer on tap type of operation. We're not that. And we're sophisticated in our design, and as I said, our approach. And they don't push those elements. And we've just naturally become that, and we've become good at it. So I think that's the, for me right now, the obvious differentials.
And then Dave, how have you been attracting your current client profile? What has been the approach to that?
So online digital advertising is key for us. Mm-hmm. The events play their part too. Comes a good marketing tool for us, and the way we built in terms of the office spaces and sizes and the way we designed, all of these components came together to, I guess, initially define, you know, our target market. So I guess that was a good thing. And then it just carried on in that way. I guess it also talks to me and the personality that I am. You know, I'm very serious about business and entrepreneurship, and this stuff keeps me awake all night, you know. So I think because of that, I've attracted a community of tenants that are similar. Mm-hmm. And
but
it's grown.
How does
that
scale from a DNA point of view? How do you replicate yourself across in your personality across so many geographies?
Yeah, so I think one way must be our people. You know, the people that we have now are very much focused as I am, and tuned as I'm tuned, type of thing. So that's filtered through to the rest of the business and the culture and our values and the way we do things. We're quick, we're fast, we get things done. So I guess our people are carrying it through the four centers we have now, and I'm sure it will as we grow into other centers and markets.
We've got to take a break now. When we come back, we'll have more clarifying questions for David. This is the Big Small Business Show, and our guest today in studio is David Sanker, CEO of The Business Exchange, and they provide office space to businesses. Now, before the break, we were trying to get an understanding of how the brand is positioned quite clearly from other local brands and how David is thinking about actually competing himself against an incoming big player, international player. Melissa, you've got a question.
Yeah. Dave, obviously one of your pillars, you said, you know, the design is for small businesses, or in fact the whole packaging, you know, from a cost perspective, location and all these things that small businesses struggle with. Have you got already within the growth of the Business Exchange clients that have grown with you? So they started off with one office and are now expanding. What has pushed the expansion? Is it because you need more offices, or there's also the internal growth within your clientele?
So yeah, one of the key points of the value proposition is the flexibility of office space. Mm. So to your point, we've had a client starting out taking a virtual office for a few hundred rand a month. The client's grown into taking a smaller office of, you know, a couple of people, up to taking a 10-person office. You know, so we see that growth all the time.
Sure.
And we cater for various different, you know, size of businesses, from, you know, the freelancers to the small to medium sized companies and even corporates. You know, we've got big banks taking space from us locally, and international market coming in that's taking space and wanting to get into the African market. We focus more on that growing, you know, business. It's been around and it's a high growth company. And the reason we do that is because we like to create a like-minded community.
Sure.
And, you know, because as I said, we're serious about getting deals done and business. We feel if we can create that community of similar size companies and with same objectives, we can get more business done. So that's been a focus point for us.
Sure.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I want to ask you around the pricing. You know, the incoming big competitor, their pricing versus yours. Is there a big difference?
So there will be.
In which direction?
They'll be more expensive.
Yeah.
They'll be more expensive. Their costs are higher, from what I've seen, to fit out and build and take on new spaces. And I think they're coming into this market thinking they know everything, and it's, you know, similar to other markets they're going into, and I think they might have a few surprises. But their pricing will be higher based on what I've seen and what I've researched.
And what happens if they watch this and then come in cheaper?
I'm just thinking that.
See, I knew I could hear you. I've got my producer in this year and you in this year.
I know what's going on in the market, and I know the deal structures that they're going into, and it just won't be feasible for them, and there won't be sustainability in their model if they do try and undercut us. So,
but
can you
withstand the classic coming in, dropping the prices, burning you out?
Yeah.
Can you withstand that?
Well, then I guess it comes back to our three pillars and our value proposition and how we're delivering on that, and how loyal our customers are to us. And I'd like to think that it wouldn't be a price war, but our customers stay loyal to us because of the service we're giving, that they're happy and they've been with us for a long time.
You know, this game that you're in, this what do we call it?
Flexible
workspace. Yeah. There was just one player many years ago, and then in the recent past, there was a few, like you've mentioned. Yeah. And it's well accepted now. There's not a trend. Sure. This is just the way it is. But in the beginning, when everyone was out competing or coming up, it was more commodity-based strategy, was my sense, which is simply, hey, get any office on the cheap, sign the lease, put some chairs and table. I'm exaggerating it.
Right.
And that's our offering, and sign it up. And so the next guy does the same thing. And maybe they kind of compete or optimize their cost model or whatever it is. So all the horses are in the race with the same strategy.
Right.
But there comes a time, which is probably now already, where some start breaking away and start going into nuanced strategy.
Right.
So these guys from international obviously have done that because they've taken on another big international player, but their strategy specifically is very different. It's got nuance.
Mm.
Whereas all the local players, barring yourself, have got fairly the same type of commoditized offering or strategy. So where do you see the break coming in? Do you get what I'm...
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's important that we stay true to our differentials to them. And we really drive that home. I think there's,
you wanna, carry on, carry on.
Yeah, I think there's, the industry is in a very high growth phase right now. Mm. I mean, if you look at cities like New York and London, the biggest occupiers of office space are actually service office business like ourselves. So the trends are there, and it's a matter of time before even bigger corporates are going to start looking at signing shorter leases and entering into contracts with, you know, companies like us. So it's indirectly, I think, answering your question, not quite answering, but there's, I think there will be consolidation. I think a lot of companies are going to fall away. I mean, there are, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs think, oh, serviced offices, flavor of the month, let's just go try it. But they don't succeed because it's not so simple. But I think there'll be consolidation, and yeah. Companies need to really position who they are and what they're all about, and then really drive that home.
I have a quick question on the third pillar, the community.
Yeah.
Is there any segmentation, segmentation within that, or is just a vibe and events that happen to build this community sense?
Yeah.
I'm wanting you to answer me in this certain segments around this community thing. Do you get what I'm?
Yeah, I think So the segment we focus on, and as I would say, 75 to 80% of our clientele, is that company that's 3 to 5 people. Growing in professional services, and a lot of their clients are the big corporates, so they're stable, got good revenues, and that's where we play. Mm. However, times are changing, as I mentioned, and just through our marketing channels, without properly selling into, and we will do that soon. You know, we're starting to get a lot bigger corporate business that are coming in now, international and local. Mm. So again, the landscape could change quite a bit for us in the next few years.
Mm. Well, what's changed for us is time. We've got to take a break now. When we are back, we'll come back with our summaries. Do stay tuned. This is the Big Small Business Show, and our guest in studio today is David Sanker. He's CEO of the Business Exchange, and they provide office space to businesses, small businesses, big businesses, all types of businesses, flexible workspace. It's time for our summaries. We're going to start with you, Kumar.
All right. David, your issue is about how to preempt a large competitor who's got all the bullets and all of that coming in. So my comments go in two categories. One is a philosophical thing, and the other one is a strategy issue. On the philosophy thing, you've got the perfect name, David. You know this Malcolm Gladwell book, David and Goliath, where Goliath wasn't the one with the strength. The one that had all the advantages was actually David. Mm. So that orientation is important to see, because the same things that Goliath had the strength was a disadvantage in that context. Mm. So I think their size and their bullets and their kind of template of just plant a flag, let's we hit South Africa, same report, same strategy, rinse, repeat, is going to count. I didn't give any. Yeah, it's going to be it's going to count against them, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I would have that right philosophy in your head first, and then like a boxer, if we still stick to this fighting type of thing, you would if someone's going up with a Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali, they would study all that boxer's previous matches to see their modus operandi. Mm-hmm. So you would go and research these guys and find out what's their model, their modus operandi, and all those types of stuff, right? Do they discount when they come in first? Mm. Do they go for a particular community? Find out everything about their boxing match and where the weak spots are. Mm. Not that you want to copy that, but you want to study that opponent. So I would do that. And then you're quite right. You need to stick to your advantages or iterate your advantage a little bit. And this game that you're in, this flexible workspace, now calls for that, which comes to my second point on strategy, once we see this philosophically like this. Mm. And where it's going to be, in my sense, is around the segmentation. Mm. And it's about the nuance. Mm. And the segmentation, and maybe you've got to redefine the location game from a strategy point of view, maybe. So their model is going to be, they have to just come and supplant it in here. Mm. There's no, they are restricted for all the money in the world from going into the nuance, because the model may not allow it, but you have that advantage. So I would segment, you said professional services. Mm. So if you say, I'm going for broke on just this segment, professional service, as an example, and then your services and the events and the things you offer is catering only for that segmentation, then you stand out. if your audience is more professional services, there's only one place for me. It's David's Place. Because look at all these things that cater just for my kind of tribe of professional services. So there's an advantage about going into a segment. You can do that across your business, or you can do it in different sites. That site is professional services. That one is media or advertising, you know. The last point is location. You want to, if traffic's a problem, you want to be considering the advantage of being in the suburbs. So, because people don't like that.
Melissa?
Dave, I think I'm going to latch on because, you know, as you're talking, and you would appreciate you from the property background, what is happening within the commercial office space is what is happening in the retail space now, where the landlords have to consider being more flexible because the big boxes and the long-term leases are not the ideal strategy for growth anymore. But what I want to latch on is what you said, two things, remaining true to who you are. And I think that's largely what Kumaran is saying. But I think, you know, having looked at what's happening in the retail space, it is the differentiator in many respects is the offering that tells the organizations, whether they be small businesses or corporates, what they actually need. Because a lot of them don't know what, they know they've got to cut space, they know they've got to have more flexibility, but in their minds, because it's not their core, they just want to focus on what their business is and what they're doing, they need somebody to just almost kind of, you know, pull it out of a hat and say, this is what you need. And I think in doing that and sharpening your value proposition, which I think is already great, and selling it as that, so that it is known and can be relatable to somebody who's saying, this is what I'm looking for. I think there's opportunity to just cement your edge in the market. That's my view.
Thanks. I also echo everything I've heard. Just add four new points to it. So first of all, I think your core differentiator needs to be defined even further, which is the business of business. Because funky is funky in it. But I think people are in business to make money and they're serious, and I think you need to push that much harder, the business of business. The second thing, I think, around execution, everyone can come in, and you've heard this on the show before, is it all comes down to how you execute your strategy. Strategy is one thing, but how getting the little things right is critically important. And if your competitors don't get those things right, people will inadvertently wander over to you because you're getting those things right. So focus on the detail on executing properly. The third thing is defining yourself more. I think what we've heard today in terms of Kumaran saying and Melissa saying is true, but I'd like to have a very strong border around who you are and what you stand for, what you don't stand for. That needs to be crystal clear so that in the consumer's mind, they understand what you stand for and understand then those other guys that you stand for this. And that to me has to be the business of business. And finally, the contradiction is the fact that you need to be flexible, because I think that as they land, they're also not stupid, they're watching this thing, they are going to adapt, and you need to be ready for that adaptation. If you are expecting to follow a strategy before and not anticipate them being quite nimble, I think that would be a bad form. I think you need to expect them to move, and you be ready to move as well. Please stay tuned to see what's coming up after the break. We'll be right back.
Because as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, there are days where you know, we feel down too. Can we cry in front of our horses? This is the Big Small Business Show. Thanks for coming back and sharing some of your time with us. Now, somebody who's been on the show before around the subject of leadership is Lee Nike. He is the CEO of TransUnion Africa, and I would say he's one of the consummate CEOs in this country, and he's been sharing his insights into leadership with us here on the Big Small Business Show. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is very important, I think, for all entrepreneurs right now, is how to lead in tough times. Welcome back, Lee.
Thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
So These are tough times, right?
Our unemployment rate is about 26.6%. And the one that worries us the most as a bureau is that almost 73% of disposable income is servicing debt in the country. Sure. So we're a highly indebted nation, and any business coming to that marketplace has to be well aware of the tough context that you walk into.
So now I'm a small business. I'm within the sea of not tranquility, but sea of what feels like disaster all around. And I've got a business to run. I've got people who are in debt. I've got people who are depressed about the politics. I've got people who are worried about whether we'll be in business tomorrow or not. So how do I lead in an organization such as that? It can't be the same as leading a business that's flying. Or is it?
Well, I think it is different. I think one of the things you always learn as a leader is that you're always two steps ahead of your team. Not that you need to know the answers, but you've worked at some of the scenarios that you could be following. I think it's specifically arduous in times like this for entrepreneurs because they're very survival. Their cash flow is dependent on very prudent and decisions that may come their way. And depending how they choose, they may not be around 3 months from now. So I think it is important. I think the strategy has to be slightly different. One of the things we talk about in this current context is, are you organized for the way you need to work in this context?
What does that mean?
Well, what that means very, very simply is, even though you're an entrepreneur, you're meant to be small. I find that entrepreneurs still do things that aren't efficient in design. What do I mean by that? As an entrepreneur, you got to figure out what you're good at doing, what you want to do. I find that many organizations or entrepreneurs are building systems, trying to build custom models for things, whether it's HR, payroll, where in a world that we live in now, that everything is as a service, it's cloud-based. Can you actually consume these services on an as-a-service model where if you did shut down, there's no long-term consequence from a cash flow expense perspective? I think the things that all entrepreneurs need to succeed typically fit into a box. I've been calling it SME in a box, entrepreneur in a box. And it's important that if an entrepreneur is doing things that makes them unique to the industry, they should try and ensure the things that are commodity. And as a reminder, a commodity is things that everybody needs. Everybody needs payroll. Unless you're in the payroll business, it is not a differentiator. So your non-differentiators should be things that are efficiently consumed from an industry service provider. When you are thinking about things that differentiate you, which will end up being core to who you are and core to your growth strategy, if you are spending the limited, you know, cash flow you have or the capex you have towards those items, you gotta be very, very clear that every decision you make is judicious. If you think about Elon Musk and other famous entrepreneurs, from time to time they throw all of the money around one single idea. How can they do it alone? Because they've actually researched this. They've thought about it many, many times. They've modeled many, many scenarios. And ultimately, they've convinced enough people in their A team, and that's a concept we've spoken about previously, to follow them hell or high water to realize that vision and strategy.
So talk about following in this time. Because as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, there are days where you know, we feel down too. Can we cry in front of our horses? Can we show our weakness, show our vulnerability? Is that prudent as a leader?
Well, I think it's one thing being vulnerable as a leader. I think in tough times, it does not make sense to pretend that things are not tough. Having said that, a friend of mine who served in Her Majesty's Royal Army actually mentioned to me, when the leader feels cold, the entire team or the squadron or the troop feels cold as well. And I like to use that analogy. When you think about the path ahead, you've chosen a bunch of people to follow you. You've always got to have this positive mindset. You're going to be practical about what you do and how you approach it on a day-to-day basis. But ultimately, you are the lighthouse. You are guiding them in a certain direction. If you lose sight of the end of the tunnel, everybody else loses it as well.
So let's come back to people now. You talk about structuring the business. Let's assume now you need to downsize in order to survive. Part of that is morale.
Sure.
Okay. How do you then manage the storyline around downsize so that not not everyone leaves, because you could have the unintended consequences, everything, so the whole ship is sinking and you know everyone leaves and all the your A team leaves with them.
Sure, there are many strategies to downsizing an organization. I think a final retrenchment or a hardcore from a labor process is always the last thing one considers. And if I was an entrepreneur, I would think about it in a sequence of steps. One, are you doing things that somebody else should be doing? And if you are doing those things, figure out a way to offload that with the people onto a third-party provider, and you start to consume the services. You look at other avenues as well. You look at temporary contractors, people that are early retirement candidates, and only at the very final step do you consider some harder action. And when you do consider the harder action, it's an important thing to note that if you don't make the sacrifice as a collective business, the bigger organization in itself may cease to exist as well. So communicating very transparently but very clearly that this is something you gotta do is par for the course. Being a leader isn't meant to be easy every day. That is why we're chosen as jockeys, entrepreneurs, and leaders to take these businesses forward. On some days, and hopefully these days are sparingly few, you've got to make some hard calls and back yourself to succeed. If anybody told you it's very, very friendly at the top, it's not at all. Your job is to make the business succeed, and sometimes at all costs.
30 seconds, I want to ask you a very personal question. What is it about leadership that you enjoy most?
Well, the biggest thing I enjoy about leadership, I think, is making a difference, first and foremost. Secondly, I enjoy building teams that subscribe to making a difference. And I take my passion and my background and where I come from, and I see the need to make a difference and solve really big problems. Pulling a bunch of people behind me to that A team that can deliver on that intent is what makes me happy and gets me up every morning. Ultimately, the one word that describes what I've just said is purpose. You've got to have purpose every day when you wake up.
Such a good place to end. That was Lee Naik, who, in my opinion, the consummate South African CEO. He's the CEO of TransUnion Africa, and we've been talking about leadership. That's it, the end of this leadership slot. Do stay tuned to find out what's coming up next on the show.
That's why I'm emphasizing we only plan for the 9 months because essentially you can't plan post the 9 months.
Welcome. Now, if you are a man or a woman out there, you might be interested to know that I was the second male member of the Business Women's Association. I am on record as saying that I think that women entrepreneurs are some of the best entrepreneurs, if not the best entrepreneurs out there. I have an incredible respect for women in the entrepreneurship space, as I grew up with an entrepreneurial mother, and my predisposition was that women are powerful entrepreneurs in the economy. But there is a fact of life that women sometimes become pregnant. And when they become pregnant, they can work up until a certain point, and then off they go to have their babies, and at some point they have to come back into their work if they're working, or as an entrepreneur, okay, how do they come back into the space of entrepreneurship after recently giving birth to a baby and still have being a mom and being an entrepreneur? Now, joining us in studio is somebody who's very familiar to you. It's Mona Lisa Sam. Welcome.
Thank you.
And she is one of those people. She is one of those people that went off to have a baby and is now coming back into the entrepreneurship fray. And she's going to be talking to us today about all the things you need to do, to consider, to organize in order to come back.
Yeah.
So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you a lot.
Okay, it's a baby girl, right?
Baby girl, Pilar Sande is her name.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you.
And I've seen pictures, really, really beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay. So how do you, first of all, there's some people say that, you know, a lot of women before giving birth have this notion that they're going to come back, and then they realize that this is not what they thought it was going to be and don't come back.
Mm.
Did you ever think of not coming back into the entrepreneurship space?
I did. And I think it's for women go through different perspectives once you become a mother. I think primarily, obviously, there's the responsibility that you have. And as a first-time mom, I think when more of an emotive factor, I think in the beginning was, I won't be able to leave this child with anyone else. There's that kind of idea in your mind. But the reality is that you have to go back to something. Life requires you to provide, you know, in as much as you can make a choice and say, I want to be a full-time mom. And I think that in itself is a respectful decision. And I really honor the moms who do that. But some of us have to make decisions based on our circumstances, particularly in how we provide. Now, if you're going back, if you're in a corporate or a full-time environment, working full-time, it's fairly easy. You know, there's policies in place in order to guide your decision about how long you're going to take off and when it is that you are required to come back. But at the end of the day, it's, I think for the mother, it's not that easy. There is an element of fear that you might not be relevant anymore because
in the workplace
because I mean on average maternity leave is 6 months in some companies, and that's a long time. Half a year, a lot can happen. If you think about the milestones that your baby can achieve in 6 months, think about it then in terms of your work organization. So they have to be, I mean, it's always awesome when the company is open to how flexible you can be during your maternity leave so that you can stay almost semi-engaged, because at the end of the day, you still need to be engaged with your child. And other factors along, I think, you know, what I found the biggest revelation is that there is so much, and rightfully so, focus on the 9 months that we only plan for that nine months, essentially. We don't plan for the after. So many factors. How was your birth experience? Are you going to suffer, or did you suffer from any postnatal depression? So there's other health factors that actually determine how fit you are to actually go back into a stressful kind of situation, which entrepreneurship is. A time factor, if your baby has special needs, you know, those kind of things can really kind of determine how you go back. So it's just those considerations.
Let's focus on entrepreneurship per se, and coming back in terms of some of the things that you need to consider practically in terms of from a support system point of view, that you have to have a support system. And then there's also has to be sort of a level of flexibility as well, because babies get sick, you know, things also do happen. There's a lot that can happen in between.
I think, I mean, the main consideration, depending on what type of business you're in, so me as a consulting business, my business is client interfacing. Mm. So clients rely on me being there, giving the work and so forth. So now when I'm not going to be there, you have to kind of have that understanding with the client as to say, what does it mean? If the client is not comfortable with, you know, remote, then you've got a problem in that you're not able to earn, right? So that's now another factor you have to consider, to say, if your business can continue without you, so you're selling products and you have a team that can continue that operation whilst you supervise, you know, in and out, then, you know, it can work well to a degree. But if you're in the consulting business, you've got to consider, how do I continue the interfacing when I'm away? Does it mean that my business stops? If you are, let's say, don't have a full team, does my business stop for 6 months? If that is the case, how do I then build reserves, financial reserves, in order to be able to be comfortable during that time? And then going into that, you know, after that period, the consideration of your support system whilst you're away. Because I think the fragmented mindset of being a mother and an entrepreneur requires different emotional stability as well.
We speak about the support system that you have to have in place, but there are also other things, for example, like delegation, that having an ability to delegate. And I know that having partnered with a number of women entrepreneurs who have been through what you're going through now, I think some of the things that I picked up were that they, first of all, planning was necessary, which you highlighted. Number two, delegation was very important, and that had to come with a level of authority of people inside to actually make those decisions. And so that happened in the 9 months before who was going to do what, and that's part of the planning. Then the third thing is your re-entry, because I think coming back and maybe as a consultant might be different to a business where there are multiple people in the organization. So giving you the responsibility to make decisions, now I come back. Now what do I do? Do I take it back? Yeah, and what does that do to our relationship?
Yeah, I think you have to factor what is best for the business. You know, with any environment, suddenness is not healthy, right? So hence the planning ahead of time. And I think in the instance of delegating authority, delegating decision making, if you have been comfortable enough during the time away that this person has made the decision in the best interest of the business, there's no real rush to now claim back your authority. You've almost got to ease yourself back into it. And you know what, Alon, you might come back thinking, this is probably the better person for the job. You know, there's also that reality, and that's why.
Are you more empathetic now?
I am. Mm-hmm. I certainly am, because I think that's why I'm emphasizing we only plan for the 9 months because essentially you can't plan post the 9 months because you don't know how you're going to feel and so forth. You can create systems and support systems to ensure that you're stable, but it might be that you might decide after that 9 months, not out of any irrational decision, but perhaps this is the better person for the position, and that might be a new transition for you within the space that you occupied before you became a mom.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. I must say, from my point of view, I'm very happy you're back.
Thank you.
And I've always thought you were empathetic. Well, for the moms out there who are have just given birth, we hope that you are inspired to come back into entrepreneurship and get stuck in again. We need everybody at this thing called entrepreneurship in order to develop our economy. Well, that's it for today. Please stay tuned to find out some of my thoughts and ideas on the entrepreneurial journey. Well, it's time for our reflections for today, and I think that's quite pertinent. If you've been watching the show over the last couple of months, in fact, couple of years, the one thing you'll notice is that there is always some sort of innovation, renewal. Now it's our reflections, Kamar and I are sitting together. Sometimes we shoot from the entrepreneur's office, sometimes we shoot from my offices, and sometimes we're here in studio. And we keep it fresh and keep it moving. But it's not that always that easy in terms of your own business to you know, once you get used to something, you get good at that thing, it's sort of the beginning of the seed of complacency. Even if you work hard, there's a sense of complacency around reinventing yourself because you become better and better and better and more honed at something, and you think that that's going to serve you in the long run. And then you have this, in inverted commas, this word which I really dislike, called disruption, about this disruptive element, or your business might be just slowly moving, or the industry might be moving in another direction, and you're getting better at that. And that's sort of something we need to be very conscious of, about reinventing ourselves.
Reinventing ourselves, falling in love again with our business, you know.
So how do you do it?
And so I've recently gone through something like that where I'm very excited. Not that I wasn't before, but that's now like a five-year-old, you know, kid in a candy store. And I went to some, so things one can do is that if there's a pertinent conference, you can go to that. Recently, I was at two this year, the one in East Africa, one in Europe, but the one in East Africa, you know, made me reflect on how they do their we're in a finance business, how they do their financing and how they use technology with that. They've used the constraints as an advantage. So they made them more creative because of their constraints. And I was left thinking, wow, you know, whilst we live in the most beautiful country in the continent or in the world, South Africa, in certain regards with technology and finance or banking, we're arrogant and we're complacent. That's the word you used. And our success becomes the contribution to our future failure. And so I was very inspired by what I saw happening in East Africa. And that accelerated me to research more things. And now I've got like a different kind of a wind in that. And so the point of this is put yourself outside of your normal context. Go totally 180 degrees. And whatever that may look or feel for you, whether it may be a conference, maybe talking to someone that's an upstart or someone that failed or a different sector altogether, you know, put yourself in a different...
So that's exactly, I mean, we've got a few seconds left. That's exactly what I did with going into the schools.
Yes.
I know nothing about schools. I've got experience in business and absolutely loved not knowing, but bringing another set of knowledge into a place and learning a whole new set and combining the new and the old is a very, very rich place to reinvent yourself. Well, that's it for today. Until next time, from all of us, it's goodbye. And remember, if you think it, make it reality and write it down. See, we reinvented ourselves. So welcome. This is the Big Small Business Show. And this is our section where we are going to be talking about nothing. Let's do that again.
The Big Small Business Show is brought to you by Chartered Accountants of South Africa. Transform the future of your business. Partner with the CASA today.
Everywhere you go, MTN.